program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. Tom Scheuer is our host, and we have a very special guest today and a very important topic, Tom.
Yes, it couldn't be any more timely, Steve. We have with us today Jim Baldwin, who is an employment law attorney at Moss & Barnett, a shareholder. He's spent the last 26 years of his career working in employment litigation and advising clients on how to comply with employment law at both the federal and the state level. Jim has been an attorney on many of the leading cases that have shaped federal and state law in this area. And so, Jim, welcome. It's great to have you with us here today.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you very much.
Jim, for our listeners, Steve grew up in Le Sueur, graduated from the University of Minnesota Law School, and with his family is active in Meals on Wheels and Caring Hands. And Jim, I know our thoughts and prayers go out to all the folks in the Fargo-Moorhead and Red River Valley here today.
Yeah, I wanted to share that as well. I listened to the news a little earlier, and it's quite a situation up there, and I send all my best wishes to those who are along the Red River.
Well, indeed. And so as we're looking at today's agenda, we're talking about the area of specifically age discrimination, which is a facet or an area of employment law that differs from other types of employment law, such as wage and hour protection, overtime rules, discrimination based on other protected classes like gender, race, ethnicity, and religion. And the list goes on. But today we're focusing on age discrimination because in our current economic situation, that seems to be an area that is growing.
It is, Tom. And recently I did check some of the statistics that the Equal Opportunity Commission keeps relative to the number of claims that they receive for age discrimination. And in the last year, it's increased almost 30%. And that, of course, I think is a reflection of our society right now. And as I look around the studio, I see as well that our workforce is graying. We're getting older. And yet the statistics indicate that folks who are nearing retirement age because of the economy and certainly because of the high cost of health care and just the inflation factors that weren't normally considered in prior generations who retired, that the workforce is determining it's going to need to work a little longer. Some indications are that upwards of 25 to 40% of folks are putting off or delaying retirement because of the downturn in the economy and those costs associated, as I said, with health care and other things that come with actually being retired. And there's also clearly a movement afoot, I think, among those who are in the retirement type of age now to want to work longer and work during retirement for something to do to supplement their financial situation. So in essence, the workforce is not retiring at an age that was considered typical just a generation ago. And frankly, we may see folks that work well into their 70s, maybe even as late as their 80s.
And so I imagine with the cascade of layoffs and the need for companies to downsize, that those aspirations are running head-on into some of the need by business owners to downsize.
Well, certainly with the economy the way it is, I think the first reaction to many by many companies to the revenue shortfalls are saying is to reduce costs. Oftentimes the easiest way to reduce cost is to reduce the costs for labor, those who provide the services that make the company day-to-day do its operations. Thus, many employers these days are looking at the benefits to their bottom line of reducing the number of employees they have, often called restructuring or reduction in force.
And so when they – I suppose maybe before we do any more, we ought to make it clear to our listeners that Moss & Barnett is a business law firm, and principally we address these concerns and issues from the employer's perspective. But, of course, today we're addressing these topics from the standpoint of just explaining what the law is without taking any particular side.
Well, certainly, Tom, over the last 26 years, it's been my privilege to work mostly on the defense side, meaning I represent employers. I have, on occasion, represented employees, former employees, and current employees who have had issues with employers. But I don't think that the status of today's economy or the situation or circumstances that give rise to folks wanting to retire later should have any bearing on whether you're working on one side of the street or the other. Literally, the protections that are provided by the age discrimination laws benefit both an employer and an employee. And it makes sense for not only the employer to know, but also the employee to know if there are rights and protections, and that those rights and protections are designed to provide an even playing field for those who are in the workforce.
Indeed. And would you attribute the increase in the number of age discrimination claims and lawsuits to there being more of that kind of misconduct, or just that the economy's downturn has led people to think more about that and perhaps raise issues either because it's happened or in the hopes that they may have a chance to make a recovery?
You know, Tom, I don't anything at face value that I read in the surveys that I've seen that discuss the number of claims that have been in the recent past brought to the EEOC or other agencies that deal with age discrimination issues, meaning the whys and wherefores for why that's happening. But I think it's a mistaken impression if one doesn't consider the economic conditions as motivating certainly many employers and employees to realize and recognize that there are these issues out there, and that oftentimes if it's not dealt with on a intercommunication between employer and employee, it does end up in claims that are being brought outside of the employment relationship.
Jim, what exactly is age discrimination under federal and state law?
In general terms, age discrimination is whenever the terms and conditions of your employment, meaning the individual and the employment setting, is based on the age of the person. The decisions are made due to the age rather than due to performance and due to other economic issues. And in the age discrimination in the federal sense, there's the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, and in Minnesota we have the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
We have more on the way. Joining us in studio is Jim Baldwin. Tom Schroyer is our host. Today, delayed retirements and age discrimination law. Phone number on the program, as always, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We invite you to give us a call on the program. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Welcome back. Minnesota Law continues, presented by Moss and Burnett. Each and every Saturday at noon, Tom Schroyer is our host in studio, Jim Baldwin. Delayed retirements and age discrimination law, hot topic right now. And our phone number is 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. We go to the phone. Stephen Hamlake, you're on the air. Steve, hello.
Oh, thank you. I've seen a number of large companies here in the Twin Cities on internet job applications require you to disclose the number of years of expertise you have, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, et cetera, before you can submit the job application. So it's required information. It looks to me like it's a dead clear way of determining what your age is without asking you that directly. I'm curious to hear your opinion on this practice. I'll hang up.
Well, thanks for the call, Steve. Generally speaking, both the federal component, the Age Discrimination Employment Act, and the Minnesota arm, Minnesota Human Rights Act, does apply to applications and other forms that would be a part of the process of becoming hired. Generally speaking, in terms of what can be asked, the questions must have some rational relationship to the bona fide occupational requirements of the job. Hence, just asking for an age, that probably isn't something that is permissible. However, there may be some reason for why the numbers of years of experience, and depending on experience in what area, may have a rational relationship to job qualifications for whatever the position is. Generally speaking, I would suggest that I would recommend that that not be something that would be a part of an application process. But then again, I don't know exactly what you were applying for. But certainly, it does raise a flag as to whether or not that has any basis as a determining factor, whether or not you are going to be a viable candidate for a position. I would question it.
And Jim, business owners, what are some of the basic do's and don'ts when they have someone come in, fill out a job app, if they have a position that needs to be filled? What do employers need to think about? What do they need to avoid to make sure they don't run afoul of the law?
Well, they need to exhibit common sense. And the common sense is that when one is hiring for a position, unless it's a qualification of the job that you be of a certain age, and we all understand that if we're a pilot, age considerations are important by both federal and state standards. But if the job qualifications don't involve any issues pertaining to how old the applicant is, there's no reason, none whatsoever, to have age as one of the questions that would be asked. I do question myself whether or not years of experience, other than just specifically setting forth the qualifications of an applicant, has any bearing either in terms of what I would refer to as a permissible application. I just think employers need to understand that they need specific information for the jobs for which they are hiring, and they should limit their application process to that. I understand as well that there are needs for other purposes within the administrative function of a business to have other information, whether it be relating to potential for pension or benefits or other types of information. Of course, that would be acceptable. But in terms of the business needs for the qualifications for a position, age should not enter into any of those types of questions.
Now, Jim, is it isn't there a profound difference between the federal and the state law in terms of who's qualified to make an age discrimination claim?
There's some. When you're looking at the federal component, it's limited to employers of at least 20 employees. And an employee is only protected if they're 40 years or older.
That's 40?
40 years of age or older. So if you're 39, you are not subject to the protections of the ADEA or the Age Discrimination Employment Act. The Minnesota Human Rights Act is a broader base. Any employer is subject to the protections that are afforded by the Human Rights Act, and age is not a limitation under the Human Rights Act. Age in general, meaning whether you're 25 or if you're 30 or if you're 18 and just entering the workforce, if there's some issue that a directive or determination has been made because of the age of the person involved, you are under the protections of the Minnesota Human Rights Act.
We have more on the way. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Burnett. Jim Baldwin in studio today. Tom Schroyer is our host. It is Delayed Retirements and Age Discrimination Law. Our phone number, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. The news and weather and then more Minnesota Law coming up.
This is 830 WCCO.
It is Minnesota Law presented by Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com. Our phone number on the program, as always, your phone calls, big part of the show at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Tom Schroyer is our host. Jim Baldwin in the studio, Delayed Retirements and Age Discrimination Law.
Thanks, Steve. We're going to talk in this segment of our program about some of the practical issues that come up in these kinds of situations where people have a claim of age-based discrimination. And so, Jim, what are some of the kinds of issues that people face in first knowing if they've been discriminated against, and then second, if they pursue a claim, what kind of evidentiary or facts do they have to show?
Well, Tom, the Some of the issues that surround age discrimination is its subtlety. It's often not an obvious type of violation for an employee to recognize, or for that matter for an employer to realize is something that has been part of the business decision-making that impacts the employee. Such things as in today's environment where we're having layoffs, where the layoff itself, and it's often referred to as facially neutral or it's a disparate impact type of potential claim, where the attempt to cause the reduction in force or the layoffs to be based upon economic conditions and to be based upon some select criteria that are objective in nature.
So now you're talking about a situation where somebody has been, in their mind, potentially discriminated against because of their age in terms of a layoff or an early buyout or even just a straight across the board reduction in force.
That's right. And oftentimes it's difficult for either the employer or the employee to see that what they've done has created a situation where the impact of that decision has created a situation of adverse impact on those whose age is 40 or greater within the workplace. There are other extremes we have are what is referred to as the disparate treatment claims, which involve actually an employer making decisions based on age and doing so intentionally. And in other words, to create a situation where the workforce does not have as many folks in the age range of 40 or over. And oftentimes the difficulty of knowing that is that the employer's intent is not known directly by the employee, or what we often refer to as circumstantial evidence that would support someone's understanding that the reason for a termination or a layoff was actually to progress or was a result of the determination of an employer that the older parts of the workforce would be those that would be affected.
It sounds like these cases go in one of two ways. The first would be if there's a totally innocent job action taken, such as a layoff, that has an unfairly disproportionate impact on people based on their age. That'd be one kind of a claim. You call that a disparate impact claim. And then the other is where there's absolute purposeful or intentional adverse action taken because of somebody's age. And you call that, what, a disparate treatment?
That's right, Tom. And I don't mean to suggest that the disparate treatment claim would be such that the intent would be simply to affect the older portions of the workforce, but that there is some underpinning to the decision or determination that ultimately led the either the termination or the layoff to disproportionately affect the older components of the workforce. And oftentimes that's the problem an employee has, is that while it appears to be intentional, there's little or no evidence facially that would show whether or not this was an actual determination on the part of the employer to rid itself of the older employees.
Jim, what about the idea that, well, we're losing money, I've got to get rid of all the older workers because the older workers make more money? If it's just to save as many jobs as possible, we got rid of all the older workers because they're at the top of the pay scale.
Well, employers still have to act rationally. And to suggest that getting rid of the higher pay scale is a sole criterion for either determination or the layoff would fly in the face of what is simply the economic realities of the workplace. What makes a business go is not whether you have high or low salary, but rather whether you've got skilled people in the positions that are critical to the operation of the business. Usually, and I would say foremostly in a situation where an employer has to face the economic realities, there are other things that can be done other than reductions in force. There can be wage or salary freezes. There can be furloughs. There can be curtailing of overtime. And certainly if there is a need beyond those types of shorter-term measures requiring a reduction in force, the employer has to be very cognizant of the fact that its actions, while not reprehensible in the first instance because they're looking to reduce the cost of overhead, the adverse impact must be something that is taken into consideration. In other words, the adverse impact to the age of the workforce that remains after the reduction in force. Hence, most both federal and the state components of the discrimination laws do require that there be such determinations regarding what is the best financial strike, that the best economic basis from which to proceed, and whether or not those shorter-term measures would be better. And once it is a determination that can be verified that the reduction in force is required, the reduction in force should be based upon criterion that are objective, criterion that are openly disclosed to the employees, and as thereafter identified and acted upon in a legitimate fashion.
It sounds like the evidence and the proof here gets to be very involved and complicated, even involving sophisticated scientific issues involving statistics and economics.
It certainly can, and of course, employment law in general is a fact-based type of inquiry. In other words, it's heavily factored in by just the facts that happen to individual employees. But certainly, it's still possible to simply use common sense and to look at your makeup before and after your potential reduction in force, and certainly make sure that your criterion are objective. In other words, it's not involving persons nor their age, but positions and the needs and critical areas of concerns for the business.
What about a situation, Jim, where a manager or a business owner has been overheard making comments that have an age component to them, something like, you know, we need to bring in new blood to our organization, or so-and-so's looking tired these days, some comments like that. Do they come into play in these cases?
They can. Generally, the evidence that is submitted in these types of age discrimination cases has been segregated into what is referred to as direct evidence, generally showing a direct link between the let's say the offensive remark and the actual decision that was made, and that's why they call it the direct evidence. And then there's a circumstantial evidence, and I think that's where you're sort of leading with your question, Tom. And those are comments or actions or practices that don't have a direct link to the decision but are in the environment of the workplace. Oftentimes, the remarks you're referring to, Tom, are called stray comments. For the most part, if they're not some connection to the decision that was made, whether it be the reduction in force or an individual termination, it oftentimes is disregarded as irrelevant. It's the role of the lawyer who's representing the plaintiff, or employee in this case, to connect those circumstantial or stray comments to the actual determination decision, and thus connect, as it were, the dots and show that the termination was based on unlawful age basis rather than some otherwise objectively identified business purpose.
Now, Jim, we were talking at the first part of the show about the distinction between federal and state law being that there is no age minimum to qualify for protection under the state law. Have you ever seen a case brought by someone under the state law that was aged less than 40 based on favoritism being shown to someone who was older than they were?
Yeah, I have not specifically been involved, but I am aware of cases that have involved persons that have claimed to have been discriminated against because their age was less than the age of another person who was given more favorable treatment. And generally, when I say treatment, I'm referring to the terms and conditions of employment, whether it be a more favorable assignment, a promotion, a bonus or pay. These are all things which are under the auspices of the state as well as the federal scheme for anti-discrimination protection. But yes, in the Minnesota context, age is not a limitation. It's wide open, and a younger person can be claimed to have been discriminated against, just as an older person can be the subject of it as well.
These laws sound to be like they're very complex, and they're even more complex when they're applied. There's a lot for a business owner to keep in mind here to make sure they're compliant with the law. And do you see business owners regularly and tell them how to make sure they comply with the law?
I do, and I adhere to the an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I can tell you simply that while they are complicated, they are part of the business model, and they are part of the economy, and they are part of what is the relationship between employees and employer. So to ignore or otherwise not make yourself aware of these different laws and the different tenets that are to be followed just begs the question as to why, when and where there will be an issue that rises to what may be a claim or maybe just a misunderstanding. So certainly I do recommend that all employers of any size, whenever there are potential issues relating to employee relations, that in fact they contact an attorney or perhaps consult the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They have a website. They have a telephone number. They can also contact either through the web or to the telephone the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. That's the enforcement agency for the Human Rights Act, and I don't want to overplay that because the Human Rights Act does, of course, allow private party actions as well. And we haven't talked about that, but maybe now's the time to do so.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back and have more delayed retirements and age discrimination law. Tom Schroyer, our host, Jim Baldwin, our guest, attorney from Moss & Barnett. It is Minnesota Law. It comes your way each and every Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Final segment, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss & Barnett. Tom Schroyer, the host, Jim Baldwin, our guest, attorney today, delayed retirements and age discrimination law.
Jim, we're going to talk in this final segment about what are some of the remedies and reliefs available and some of the consequences of a finding of age discrimination.
Well, Tom, under the federal component of age discrimination law, the the claim is entitled to be heard by a jury, and the jury is provided with the challenge to determine, of course, whether or not there was, in fact, age discrimination. And the remedies that could flow from the jury decision is generally the wage and benefit loss that was occasioned by either losing your job or losing your position or not getting a promotion. And, of course, if the employee prevails, he or she is entitled to their reasonable attorney's fees and costs. The court, under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, also is empowered to do equitable type of remedies as well, such as either reinstatement or an injunction enjoining the type of activity that the employer has been found to have engaged in that is unlawful under the Act, or any other fashioned remedy which would achieve whatever needs the employee is able to identify as having lost as a result of losing their job, position, or promotion. Under the Human Rights Act here in Minnesota, the case is to be decided by a judge. It's not entitled to a jury unless you're in the federal court system. We hadn't talked about that earlier, but I'll just simply say that under the federal act, to start a claim, you have to file a charge with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. You must do so within 300 days. Under the Human Rights Act, if you want to make a claim for age discrimination, you must either file with the Human Rights Department or start a litigation, either state or federal court, within 365 days of when you think you've been violated by your employer. But under the Act here in Minnesota, the remedies that are available are much broader than they are under the Age Discrimination Employment Act. You're entitled to compensatory loss, which is the loss of pay and loss of other benefits that were part of your job or the promotion that you did not get. And the judge is empowered to treble that award if he feels in his own discretion that that's something that would make the employee whole. In addition, unlike under the Age Discrimination Employment Act, the employee under Minnesota law is entitled to pain and suffering damages, which is the humiliation, hurt, and literally anger that results from having been done wrong, so to speak, by an employer. Of course, there's also the right to reasonable attorney's fees and costs, and there's a punitive damages could be awarded as well. A limit on that is $25,000. I did fail to mention that under the ADEA, there's also a provision called liquidated damages, which allows the court, if there was willful violation of the act, to double the loss that was occasioned or the remedy that was occasioned by the proof at trial. And lastly, although it doesn't usually impact the employee, under the Human Rights Act, there is a right to for a judge to make a civil penalty that goes to the state.
Jim, a quick question here. I know we're just about out of time. Can an employer force an employee to retire at a certain age?
No, it cannot. And I mean to say that with the following caveats. In Minnesota, under Minnesota law, and it's governed by the Human Rights Act and other statutes, there can be a mandatory retirement at 70. Under the federal act, there is no mandatory retirement, except if you're an executive or high policymaker and are subject to a pension. Furthermore, under the state component as well, there is an executive exception to the mandatory retirement. So the answer to your question is, under federal law, no. Under state law, only if it's at 70 and it's been posted in the workplace.
All right, gentlemen. Jim, great to meet you. Jim Baldwin, Tom Schroyer. Tom, we'll talk to you next week. The program is...
We're going to talk about the broadband infrastructure benefits available under the federal stimulus bill.
All right, very good. That is Minnesota Law next Saturday at noon here on News Radio 830 WCCO. It's brought to you by and presented by each and every week. Moss and Barnett, available online at moss-barnett.com.